Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Welcome, everybody, to this issue of the Mountain Grapevine Radio Show on WART Radio at 95.5 FM here in the mountains of western North Carolina. On the telephone today, we have David Fussell, the winemaker of Duplin Winery out in Rose Hill, North Carolina. David, welcome.
Well, thank you. We're honored that you called down here in the flatland and find out a little bit about what we're doing down in Rose Hill, North Carolina.
As you know, we were out your way not too long ago for our annual meeting of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association. Had the opportunity to come over and visit your nice winery and participate in some of the things going on there. David, tell us a little bit about you. Where'd you come from? How'd the family get started in the business out there?
Oh, man. My father was actually a school teacher, and my uncle, a carpenter, and they decided that they would buy a farm on the side to supplement their income and started growing pigs and corn, and the North Carolina Department of Agriculture was promoting grow muscadine grapes for a big winery out of New York. So my dad and uncle saw that they could probably sell a little bit of grapes to this big winery, and had a promise of $350 per ton. They set out 10 acres of grapes about 3 miles east of Rose Hill. It takes about 4 years for a little vine to fully mature. While they're waiting on their first big crop, the big winery said, you know, we've got too many muscadine grapes now, so we're only going to pay you $150 per ton. So what in the world are a whole bunch of country boys going to do with 10 acres of grapes? So they started dumping grapes and licking labels and opened a little winery in Rose Hill. And, of course, this was the Bible Belt, and it did sit very well with the locals, especially my grandmother, who said that they've opened a factory of liquid sin, and she wasn't having it. So we're now Methodist, and we also close on Sundays. The winery started around planting grapes in the late 60s, and the first wines for sale were in 1975.
So what was production in terms of bottles or cases in 1975?
The first year was 20 cases of wine that was actually bottled in mason jars with the Duplin label on it, and couldn't afford to go out and buy, you know, wine bottles in bulk, so they would go to our local trading company, buy a couple of cases a week, and fill them up and sell them out the front door. Very humble beginnings.
I tell you what, that's just what it takes. You know, you did what you had to do to survive and make it work.
Well, it was a lot of hard work. Not only was my family growing grapes, but also there were 67 other families growing muscadine grapes here in North Carolina. There was a total of 2,600 acres of muscadine grapes. Compared to today, I don't think that we have much more than about 1,200 or 1,400 acres of muscadine grapes grown here in North Carolina.
Yeah, I think the last census on that was around 1,400, yeah.
We had a lot more grapes in the early 70s, so the Department of Agriculture went to the Commerce Department and came back, and we had a new written here in North Carolina, whereas any wines made from North Carolina-grown grapes, the state would not charge the excise alcohol tax. So that gave wineries using North Carolina-grown grapes a pricing advantage in the stores, and we took advantage of that law and grew our business from 20 cases in 1975 to 44,000 cases by 1983.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
That's quite a growth.
Yeah, unfortunately it didn't last but those 8 years because some fancy lawyers came down with the little skinny ties and got this tax break ruled unconstitutional, and so now our wines were going to have the excise alcohol tax on top of the price, and our wines, of course, now are more expensive, and sales dropped from 44,000 cases to 18,000 cases, and then settled eventually by 1990 at 4,000 cases per year.
That's quite a come down from 44,000. Wow.
Yes, and it was devastating. I mean, my father lost his house because he had used our home as collateral. All the good equipment was sold off. We really just struggled for years and years and years up until 1995. And in 1995, 60 Minutes aired a segment that said, drink a glass of red wine, it's good for you. And down south, a lot of people drink sweet tea. And they went out and tried to drink these Merlots and cabs and said, this stuff is just a little too bitter for me. And they found our muscadine wines, which are sweet and fruity. It kind of tastes just like you're biting into some fresh grapes. And they enjoyed it and liked it. And sales rose. And then in 1996, Campbell University, along with 22 other universities, started studying wines, especially muscadine wines, for phenol compound called resveratrol, and they discovered some very high numbers of resveratrol found in both the white and the red muscadine wines, and that news got put on the front page of the largest paper in the state of North Carolina, and we were very, very fortunate to grow and hire a bunch of smart people to work with us, and today we'll sell about 410,000 cases of wine per year and make a little over a million gallons.
Wow. That's a fantastic comeback story, David, I have to tell you. Wow.
Well, I still enjoy a bologna sandwich now, but we are blessed. I mean, we have a lot of people who work with us who have just really taken ownership. We have 162 associates, I believe, and about 20 or 30 of them just have made this winery their winery. Most importantly, we found a lot of good people that would give us some support and purchase our wines, and they're the reasons we're really in business, and so we're really humbly appreciative of their support.
Well, I have to remind our radio audience that Duplin Winery is the largest muscadine winery, not only in North Carolina, but I think in the world. Is that right?
Rosario is not only the home of the world's largest muscadine winery, but also the home of the world's largest frying pan.
The largest what?
Frying pan.
Oh, come on. What's that all about?
Yes, sir. You can cook 280 whole chickens in it at one time. If the handle's still attached and not laid on the ground, it's pretty impressive.
Jeez. Rose Hill's famous for the largest chicken frying pan. That's funny.
That is it. It's in the Guinness Book of World Records. Check it out.
I'll be doggone. That's something else out there, Dave. I can't
have
no idea.
Well, that's how us rednecks and Little Rose Hill operate, you know?
Well, us rednecks up here in the mountains, we got a couple of fun things that we going up here, too, but we don't have anything like the world's biggest frying pan. That's funny. We've got a lot of people out there, I'm sure, are interested in learning more about the actual winery itself. You know, for example, can you tell us how big is the winery proper in terms of square footage and how many people work there? You know, a little more about your operation.
The winery itself is about 130,000 square foot. We have about 1.7 million gallons of stainless steel capacity. All of our tanks are chilled to keep our wines cool at all times. We have a bottle line that is one of seven, actually, in America. Very fortunate to be able to borrow enough money to get this thing over here, but it can bottle right at 9,000 bottles per hour, and we usually bottle Monday through Thursday, and Fridays are usually a service day. The winery also really focuses a lot on building relationships, which is the most important thing probably in almost any business. Where my father and uncle and grandfather started the winery in the little town of Rose Hill, in the town limits, those old buildings now are sort of like a visitor center where we have tasting bars, and we also turned the old bottling room into a kitchen, and we have an old fermenting room, which is now our bistro restaurant, which serves lunch every day, except for Sunday. And on Saturday nights, we break out some candles and throw out some white tablecloths, and we have a great candlelight dinner show. We also recently opened a new winery in the state of South Carolina, which is located in North Myrtle Beach. There we have 16,000 gallons of capacity, and we're making probably about 6,000 cases a year there. And at that location, it's right on Highway 17 in front of Barefoot Landing, and we're able to expand our store. You know, we had a difficult time. The only draw we had at Rose Hill was a frying pan, and North Myrtle Beach has a beautiful beach. So it's really helped us meet a whole bunch of new people and share our story and our wines.
Well, glad to see you're expanding outside the Rose Hill area. I'm tempted to try to convince you into setting up something like Duplin West so we can have a place to sell our grapes when we get them ripe here in another couple of years.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, if you got a spot, we can definitely help you out there.
Well, we're very interested. The biggest question we get asked out here, now keep in mind that these are, you know, mostly good, hardworking tobacco farmers. First thing out of their mouth is, you know, who's going to buy my grapes? And when I tell them, whoever you're going to sell them to, they say, no, I can't sell anything. You know, I took my tobacco to the auction, and they sold it and just handed me the money.
Yes. Well, one of the things that we do recommend is that before you start, it may be a pretty good idea to have a customer first. So if any of your folks ever want to, you know, the gas mileage would probably be better come down the hill, but the trip back up may be a little more costly. But we definitely hope that maybe one day we could try some of your grapes down in Rose Hill and press them and make some mountain wine out of them.
Well, I tell you what, people, we've done blind tasting tests. We've been working on this now, as I told you, a number of years, and we've made some wines, we made pies, preserves, I mean, juice. We've done all kinds of things here, including some unique food products that nobody's ever seen or heard tell of. It. We sell to tailgate markets. And these are really nice quality grapes from a flavor point of view. They're absolutely fabulous. And most people who try the ones from the flatlands, the big fatter ones about the size of golf balls, probably like the ones you folks grow, and try these. These are about the size of a normal table grape that you'd buy in one of the stores. So they don't grow quite as big here in the mountains, but boy, do they have a wonderful flavor. We've already tested to make sure it makes really nice wines and so forth. So the problem is we have small vineyards. We don't have serious acreage yet. So what we're trying to do is form a collaborative group. We're going to call it the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Western Region Co-op or something. And we'll collaborate. We'll get a ton or two from that vineyard and a ton or two from here, and we'll see if we can put them together and make something interesting for somebody somewhere. So that's what we're trying to do right now.
Well, that's awesome. That is awesome. I hope that maybe you can send me some of your grapes this September.
Well, I'll try to get you a little special package going that way, David. I think once we get things rolling here, we're already going out talking to people about doing, you know, extraction of olive oil from seeds. We're talking about resveratrol, working with Frank King over here at King Bio for resveratrol extraction. We're talking to a number of people about a variety of different products other than just the wine end of it. But certainly that's a market that we want to pay attention to and be able to supply somewhere along the road. But like I said, we're just now putting grapes in the ground around here. So it's going to be a couple of years before we got anything to talk about. But it started. That's the main thing. It's started.
We started making with the stomping and licking bottles and stomping grapes. And very, very, you know, our first wines were actually, you know, hand bottled for many years. We actually hand-bottled up until 1996, and so you never know. I mean, but you got to really be—you've got to be tenacious enough, as my dad was, to really get things started. And you sound like you're really on a good path. And as long as you just keep busy and don't give up, you never know what will happen.
Well, Dave, we're going to take a station break at this point and tell everybody to hang on. We'll be right back.
Today's program is being brought to you by Rufus Tincture for Vapors. Aunt Vicky was visiting her brother Barney up in Shelton Laurel when there was a terrible accident. Barney was mowing hay on a steep slope on his farm when his tractor rolled over and crushed his leg. His neighbor happened to see him from the adjacent field and come a-running. He used a locust post lying near the cattle gate to pry the tractor's fender off of Barney's leg so he could get out from underneath the tractor. When his neighbor brought him back to the house, Aunt Vicky took one look at Barney's crushed leg and came down with the vapors. Barney's neighbor reached into the chest pocket of his coveralls and pulled out a small tincture bottle. He popped the cork and held it under Vicky's nose.
She sniffed it, and her vapors immediately went away. When Aunt Vicky inquired what was in the bottle, she was told that an old hermit living up on Lightning Ridge named Rufus had made it for his wife because she was very prone to getting down with the vapors every time she saw a snake or a spider. Aunt Vicky set out to find the hermit and get her own bottle of tincture for the vapors. When she got into the old cabin where the hermit lived, she found Rufus lying on the front porch dead as a doornail. After the kerfuffle of his burial died down, she went back to his cabin and found an old notebook stuffed in a crack between the log wall and fieldstone chimney. It had the Rufus formula for the tincture for stopping vapors. Vicky saw this as her chance to make a new product and make a few bucks along the way. Most of her women friends came down to the vapors at least once a week. Having a tincture to quickly revive them would be a godsend. So she began making it for sale using her kitchen to whip up batches for bottling. She called it Rufus Tincture for Vapors in honor of the old mountain hermit who left the formula in his notebook. Rufus Tincture for Vapors is another unique product made in the USA here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Rufus Tincture for Vapors for $1.298 at the retail counter of Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall. And now back to our regular program.
Welcome back, folks. We've been on the telephone today with David Fussell, winemaker at Duplin Winery out of Rose Hill, North Carolina.
Our wines are actually sold in 15 other states. When I go up north, you know, my sales pitch, I can look out and see a bunch of folks just staring with their mouth wide open, and of course I say, okay, I can speak a little slower if you're not, if you're having a hard time with my southern dialect. And so that usually breaks the ice. I tell you, one of the things I thought about earlier to tell you, you know, when we were talking about humble beginnings, my father, as I told you, was growing pigs and corn at the same time of grapes. And when he started the winery in 1976, he got his first big order of about 112 cases, and his only means of transportation to get this wine to this big distributor in Raleigh was his pickup truck, and there was too much wine for that. He had a 1959 old Ford dump truck. There was not enough wine for the dump truck, and so he washed off actually a hog trailer, sprayed that thing off really good, and loaded up the wine cases, and me as a little boy, I drove up with him and to Raleigh, and we discreetly drove in and parked in front of this huge building. At the time, it was probably the largest building I've ever seen as a little six-year-old, and he left me in a truck so he could find out where to take the trailer, and as I'm sitting there, big trucks are driving by, and of course, they're looking down at, you know, this pickup truck with a hog trailer and wine in the back, and people are peeping out the windows, and my dad comes back out and jumps in the truck, and another guy waves him down and says, sir, I have a question. Is that wine here in the back of this trailer? And Dad said, well, yes, it sure is. Some of the best sweet Muscadine wines you're ever going to taste. And he said, well, I've seen it all, but I've never seen wine delivered to a distributorship in a hog trailer. So that is humble beginnings, Ann.
Let's talk about the vineyard prop. What kind of grapes are you growing in your vineyard out there? And tell me about the different kind of suppliers you have, what kind of grapes they're producing for you.
We have a network of growers who all together, we grow roughly about 1,100 acres of sweet Muscadine grapes. Our vineyard has expanded, but we soon found out that we could pay a grower who has ownership in a vineyard by the grade of the grape, and we would receive a lot better grape. So we have 43 families who are contracted to grow roughly about 1,050 acres. We not only grow grapes here in North Carolina, we also have diversified, trying to dodge hurricanes, trying to dodge late freezes. We also, because of that dodging, we grow grapes in South Carolina. We also grow grapes in Shubuta, Mississippi, which is about 50 miles south of Meridian on the Alabama line, and we grow grapes near the Juniata Springs, Florida. Now, we have a rule that all of our grapes must be pressed on the day of harvest, and it's very difficult to get grapes to us from Meridian, Mississippi, or Juniata Springs, Florida, so we have a pressing station in Florida which presses those grapes the day that they're picked, and we chill the juice down and bring it to our winery here in Rose Hill. And about 85% of our grapes are pressed here in Rose Hill, usually between September 10th and October the 1st.
So you have the juice delivered in refrigerated trucks?
No, sir. They're insulated tankers. So we chill the juice down to 39 degrees. That's too cold for the yeast to work, or the wild yeast to work in the juice. So it's very, very cold. And when it arrives here, it's usually only 1 or 2 degrees higher. So we're still bringing in this chilled juice unfermented.
What's the longest haul that you do with those? In number of hours, what's the longest drive time?
From here to Meridian is 14-hour drive.
Wow.
Too long. From Meridian, or Shibuda, actually, which is farther south, to the Juniata Springs is a 4-hour trip. So our grapes make a 4-hour trip from Mississippi to Florida. They're pressed that day. Overnight, we bring the temperature of the juice down to 39 degrees. And then maybe the next day or so, we'll load it in a 5,700-gallon tanker, which is double-walled with insulation. And the trip from Juniata Springs to here is about 12 hours up, well, over to Interstate 95 and then straight up to North Carolina.
Well, if that's the case, we got a proposition here we could probably work with. We're only about 8 hours from where you are, so insulated tankers, good idea.
Yes, sir.
Now I can ask that question. I get asked, like, well, how are we going to get our grapes from here to there? So we just set up ourselves a little pressing station and a cooler, and that's the way you do it.
That would definitely be the most efficient way. A tanker of juice equals 2 full tractor trailers of grapes, which would hold 24 tons. So that's 48 tons of grapes that you're hauling, or 5,600 gallons of juice. So you're definitely more efficient pressing grapes where you are.
That is good information to know. The co-op group that we're working on here is trying to work through this kind of stuff right now. Well, we just may have to give you a call, Dave, and ask for some advice on how to proceed next in about another year or so here.
We'll be more than happy to try to help.
Talk to me just a little bit about where we can reach you. How can we contact you, website, all that other good stuff?
Well, now, the best thing in the whole wide world is to get folks to come down and visit with us so we can hug their neck and show them what we've got going on here in Rose Hill or in North Myrtle Beach. Our winery here in Rose Hill, North Carolina, is conveniently located just a mile off Interstate 40 at exit 380 in Rose Hill. And our winery in North Myrtle Beach is right on Highway 17 beside Alligator Adventure and in front of the Alabama Theater and the Barefoot Landing shops and restaurants. And at each location, our guests can definitely have the opportunity to learn about 12 different wines that we'll have on the tasting sheet that day, and also learn some stories about my grandfather. And if any one of them say, you know, we heard Dave on the radio, and any of our folks say, well, you know, he's been let go 7 times by his dad throughout the years, I hope they'll say, well, he said on the radio he's been hired 8 times, and he set the record here at Duke Winery. My mother has hired me 8 times. Bless her heart.
Well, where did you go the 7 times in between, Dave?
One time I laid in the house, and I said, I'm going to show Daddy. He really needs me. And of course, for about 2 weeks, I didn't get a phone call, so I crawled back to the winery and begged for my job again. I did deserve to. Listen, anybody out there who's making wines or planning to get into the wine business, the number one rule is make sure everything's clean. And the number two rule is to make sure when you're pumping out of a wine tank, you need to vent that tank. If you do not vent that tank, you can cause all kinds of problems, and a 86,000-gallon wine tank can look just like a crushed Pepsi can. I happened to crush one of those things, and boy, it was a mess. I deserved to be fired that day. I came back to work, I have to pay, and it took me about 8 years to pay that tank off.
What did you do to cause the tank collapse?
Well, I forgot to vent it. If you do not open the top of a tank and you hook a pump up to the tank and open the valve and hit the button and walk away, there's 14 pounds per square inch keeping us here on Earth, and that 14 pounds per square inch will crush a double-wall stainless steel tank in a matter of minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, the worst thing about it was I tried to cover it up before Dad got back from a sales meeting in Raleigh. I hooked up an air hose to it. Don't do that.
You're trying to blow it up again, huh?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not an educated man like me doing that stupid stuff. But the tank blew up, blew the whole end of the winder down and the roof off. Somebody should have died. The Lord just blessed us and looked after us. But there was no getting by with that. That's probably the biggest mistake I've made ever at the winery.
I'm afraid to ask you what the other six times, what happened when you got fired or laid off?
Well, one time, I'll tell you this, my grandfather, after my grandmother died, he incorporated a rule that nobody around the winery could tell anybody how old he was. So he started court, and he dated this lady named Miss Ham, and at the time, the local newspaper did an interview on us and said, Dave, you're mighty young to be the president of this growing business, this growing winery. I said, hold on. I said, Dad only made me the president, so if a banker or a lawyer comes around. For the rest of the time, my 89-year-old granddaddy still runs the show. Well, they published that. I didn't know anything about it, and Miss Ham found out that he was 89 and not 79 and broke up with him. So my grandfather fired me that one time. I think that was like number five. The other ones are just immaterial. They really were not my fault.
I see. Well, we'll just leave it lay at that, Dave. Well, folks, we've been talking on the telephone today with David Fussell, the winemaker down at Duplin Winery in Rose Hill, North Carolina, and certainly he welcomes anybody and everybody to come on down and check out their wonderful facilities there and taste some of the great wines. If you happen to be down in the Myrtle Beach area, check them out over there, too. Dave, we really appreciate your taking time to be with us today and look forward to seeing you again sometime in the future.
Well, I want to let you folks know, too, that if you don't get down in the flatlands down here, check us out at DuplinWinery.com, and I'll tell you this, that we believe we make some of the best sweet wines in the whole world, and we work very hard and was recently named by some of the folks around as the winery of the South, and we're honored and definitely appreciate everybody who's drinking our wines. We appreciate their support.
Okay, Dave, thanks much. We'll call that a wrap for today's program.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!